Did Eowyn really kill the Witch King on a technicality, just because she wasn't a man, or was there something deeper going on? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, and other great fantasy books and TV shows. If you're interested in that, please click on the subscribe button in the bottom right of your screen. It's one of the most memorable lines from the Lord of the Rings films. The Witch King of Angmar cries out that no man can kill him, and Eowyn reveals her identity and cries, "I am no man," before killing him. But is that really all that happened? Was the Witch King of Angmar, the Lord of the Nazgul himself, really killed on a technicality? Well, let's rewind a bit first to understand why the Witch King thought himself to be invulnerable, and why he truly wasn't. As a short history, the Witch King was once human, one of the mortal men Sauron gave a Ring of Power to, which granted him great power and an extended life. This life, though, was not the eternal youth of dreams, but a stretching, thinning, until the Witch King and the other eight lords faded from mortal eyes and became wraiths. When Sauron lost his mortal form with the ring cut from his finger at the end of the Second Age and disappeared from history for 1,000 years, the nine wraiths also hid. It's worth saying that at this stage, the Witch King of Angmar was not called the Witch King of Angmar. In fact, he was probably originally a lord from Numenor. He got his moniker because when he eventually resurfaced in around the year 1300 of the Third Age, he was in Angmar, an area in the north of Middle-earth near the top of the Misty Mountains. He built a kingdom, raised armies of fell and dark creatures, and became known as the Witch King of Angmar, a ruler and a magic user. And he used his new strength to wage merciless war on the three kingdoms of Arnor, the northern successor kingdom to Numenor. I'll cover the Wars of the Witch King in another video, because it is a fascinating time in Middle-earth history, but basically, through a combination of his army, political machinations, and various untimely plagues, he managed to vanquish the three parts of the Kingdom of Arnor. He did this so completely that centuries later, during the Lord of the Rings, that part of the world is still largely unpopulated. There's still the Shire and Bree towards the southern edges of the land, but the towns and cities of old to the north are gone completely. Obviously, eventually, during all this destruction, the other free peoples of Middle-earth started to get a bit concerned. They formed a coalition of Gondorians, elves, Dunedain, and the remnants of the northern forces, and even hobbits, and the Witch King's army was finally defeated. The Witch King himself, one of the most powerful beings in the world, fought on before finding himself face to face with the might of Glorfindel, at which point his geostrategic objectives in the north complete and wary of Glorfindel, he fled. Glorfindel forbade pursuit by his allies, saying that far off yet is his doom, and not by the hand of man will he fall. This is clearly foresight of some kind on Glorfindel's part, but it's not completely clear whether it is a curse or a prophecy or just a simple statement of fact. Far off is his doom, and not by the hand of man will he fall. But in any event, those words soon became well known among the wise and learned of Middle-earth, adding to the legends of both Glorfindel and the Witch King. Crucially, even the Witch King himself seems to have heard about what Glorfindel said and gave it credence. When, in the books on the Pelennor Fields, Eowyn stands over her father's dying body and swears to hinder whatever the Witch King would do, his retort is to quote the prophecy, to assert that no living man may hinder him. But here's the thing. He seems to have somehow turned it in his mind from a prophecy of his death, that it wouldn't be by the hand of man, into an assertion of indomitability, that no man could kill him. So when Eowyn reveals herself as no mortal man, instead a woman, we read that the Witch King was stunned into silence, as if in sudden doubt. After an exchange of blows, this is what happens next. Her shield was shivered in many pieces, and her arm was broken. She stumbled to her knees. He bent over her like a cloud, and his eyes glittered. He raised his mace to kill. But suddenly, he too stumbled forward with a cry of bitter pain, and his stroke went wide, driving into the ground. Merry's sword had stabbed him from behind, shearing through the black mantle, and passing up beneath the hauberk had pierced the sinew behind his mighty knee. "Eowyn! Eowyn!" cried Merry. Then, tottering, struggling up with her last strength, She drove her sword between crown and mantle as the great shoulders bowed before her. The sword broke, sparkling into many shards. The crown rolled away with a clang. Eowyn fell forward upon her fallen foe. But lo, the mantle and the hauberk were empty. Shapeless they lay now on the ground, torn and tumbled, and a cry went up into the shuddering air and faded to a shrill wailing, passing with the wind, a voice bodiless and thin that died and was swallowed up and was never heard again in that age of this world. So, actually, there are two blows here that killed the Witch King. Eowyn's, which seems to have done the actual killing, and Merry's, which first injured him. At which point, let's leave Eowyn there and take a look at what was going on with Merry and that sword. Don't worry, we'll be back with Eowyn in just a moment. In the movie, Merry seems to have just got a lucky hit in while the Witch King was distracted. But in the books, Tolkien made it very clear that it was the blade itself that was the important thing. Crucial, even. It was destroyed in the act of damaging the Witch King, but this is what we read. So passed the sword of the Barrowdowns, work of Westerness. But glad would he have been to know its fate, who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom, when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. So this magical blade broke the spell that bound the Witch King's invisible body to his will. In other words, this blade, and only this blade, had the power to damage the undead in that way, which meant that Eowyn's non-magical sword could be so effective and kill him. Which, by the way, explains why the film underplayed Merry's part and the sword's importance a little bit, and emphasised Eowyn's role, because they made an artistic choice earlier in the films to gloss over the origins of that blade and how it happened to be in Merry's possession. In the films, it was just one of the swords Aragorn gave the hobbits at Weathertop. It looks quite cool, but we're not told it's particularly magical in any way. In the books, it is very different. And as is so often the case with Tolkien, we have to delve back into the depths of history to understand exactly what is going on. It really is astonishing how well these books work both for casual readers and even more so for those who want to put in the work to understand the layers of symbolism, history and magic that go into moments like this. We talked a bit ago about the Witch King's wars and the Three Kingdoms of Arnor in the north of Middle-earth. One of those three kingdoms was called Cardolan. This kingdom covered an area we know well near the Shire, including the South Downs, the Barrow Downs, and the Old Forest. The kings of Cardolan were Dúnedain, descended from Numenor, the most splendid and advanced human civilization ever, and some of that knowledge and craft had been passed down to them. As a result, their smiths were able to forge magical blades of a sort. When the Witch King of Angmar and his army were attacking Cardolan, it was only natural that these smiths started forging blades that were specifically powerful against the forces of Angmar. The Witch King of Angmar was particularly fond of creating undead and throwing them against his enemies, and was undead himself, remember. He's a wraith, of course, not physically human anymore. So you would obviously need some kind of magical weapon to kill him. So the Dúnedain of Cardolan made blades that had magic in them, specifically aimed at being able to damage the Witch King. Perhaps these blades were useful in slowing down the Witch King's advance for a time, but eventually Cardolan fell, and the last king was interred in a barrow in the Barrowlands, and some of those blades, as well as other treasures, were interred with him. The last few survivors of the Dúnedain of Cardolan sheltered around the Barrow Downs and the tombs of their kings for a while before the Witch King finally finished them off by unleashing some Barrow Wights down there. The Barrow White that Frodo and co. meet in the Barrow Downs centuries later had been sent there by the Witch King, for example, all that time ago, and, being undead, had just stayed there all that time. With the fall of Cardolan, the Witch King probably thought that was the last he'd see of those blades, if he ever even knew about them. So we have some undead-destroying weapons, forged specifically to counter the magic of Angmar, long buried and long forgotten in a tomb of a king somewhere between the Shire and Bree, guarded by a Barrow Wight who had been created to kill some long-gone foes and had just stayed there ever since. Enter the Witch King once more. At the start of The Lord of the Rings, he had been sent with the other Nazgul back up to his old stomping ground in the north, hunting for Baggins and the Shire. While passing by the Barrowlands, he took the opportunity to re-energize those Barrow Whites he had sent there all that time ago. It probably felt like a good idea. They could help block off the route east of the Shire en route to Rivendell. And his plan worked. The hobbits do end up going through the Barrowlands, and despite Tom Bombadil's very clear directions, they manage to get themselves caught by one of those Barrow Whites and held in that great Barrow tomb of the King of Cardolan that we mentioned earlier. It is only Tom Bombadil's timely intervention that saves the day. Tom then empties the barrow of all of its treasure to break the spell that bound the white there, and he gives each of the hobbits one of the blades to carry with them, an ancient, undead-destroying dagger. This is what we read. For each of the hobbits, he chose a dagger, long, leaf-shaped and keen, of marvellous workmanship, damasked with serpent forms in red and gold. They gleamed as he drew them from their black sheaths, wrought of some strange metal, light and strong and set with many fiery stones. Whether by some virtue in these sheaths, or because of the spell that lay on the mound, the blades seemed untouched by time, unrusted, sharp and glittering in the sun. "Old knives are long enough as swords for hobbit people," he said. "Sharp blades are good to have, if shire folk go walking, east, south, or far away into dark and danger." Then he told them that these blades were forged many long years ago by men of Western Ess. They were the foes of the Dark Lord, but they were overcome by the evil king of Khandoum in the land of Angmar. The evil king of Khandoum is obviously the Witch King, though the hobbits wouldn't have known that. They head off wondering if the daggers will ever be of any use. They obviously are. It is Merry's dagger that interests us, for that is what he was carrying when the Witch King confronted him and Eowyn on the Pelennor Fields. The others were probably also enchanted and powerful in their own ways. We see it in the reactions of the wise and knowledgeable of Middle-earth when they see them. Even some of the Nazgul recoil when Frodo pulls his dagger out on Weathertop. But obviously the important point is that the sword Merry uses to stab the Witch King is probably the only one on that battlefield that could have damaged him at all. As Tolkien said, no other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. Tolkien is famously reticent in describing the mechanics of his magic system, but it seems that here we have something like the magic of the ring holding the Witch King's will or spirit in the world by binding it to his invisible body, and then the magic of Merry's sword not just dealing a physical wound to him, but breaking that bond, which in turn made him vulnerable to Eowyn's killing blow. Many have pointed out that Tolkien is deliberately less than 100% clear about which blow was the technical killing one, and many more have pointed out that Tolkien also uses man to refer to humanity as a whole, so Merry also counts as not a man, technically. But I think the main point here is that Tolkien doesn't dwell on the technicalities, and we probably shouldn't either. It does seem clear that both blows were needed. Merry's somehow magically brought the Witch King to his knees, making him vulnerable, and then Eowyn's finished him off. Merry could not have done what he did without her earlier heroism, and she could not have done what she did without his. And neither could have happened but for events thousands of years earlier, and an unforeseeable chain of events in the present. The Witch King was not killed on a technicality, but by inexorable destiny. As is so often the case with Tolkien, the Witch King's death came about because of his own hubris, believing he could not be killed, and at the hands of the least likely opponents, probably the only woman on the entire battlefield, and a hobbit wielding a knife whose power he had no idea of. And Merry would never even have had that blade if the Witch King hadn't roused the Barrow Whites earlier in the story. Glorfindel may not have known all this when he said that not by the hand of man will the Witch King fall, but he was right. The Witch King was killed by a woman, a hobbit, the work of a long-forgotten smith, and his own hubris. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos like this, please click on the link to my playlist on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.